was getting ready to fly my glider that I bought just last fall. And my boyfriend had test flown it a couple of days prior, and he was like, it's good to go, don't worry. I had just flown with him in his glider to test some of my skills to make sure I was ready. And I'm sitting in this thing, and it was really weird because I wrote an article afterwards for my club. And it was very therapeutic to write because it made me realize that it was completely silly. I had flown 7 different models of gliders before over the past 5 years. And yet I'm sitting here in this glider that's just like every other glider that I've flown before. It doesn't have too many different particularities to it that are that complicated. It's basically like you've driven 7 different cars and now you're about to drive the 8th different car. And now you sit there and you go, oh, I can't do this. And so I'm sitting there and I'm ready to go. And the tow pilot's ready to go with his airplane. And I'm all hooked up and I've done all my checks and everything's ready. And I started crying and freaking out as if I just couldn't do it. I thought, you know what? You're lying to yourself. You're not as good of a pilot that you think you are. I mean, it was just crazy. All of a sudden, all these thoughts entered my mind. And I thought, I can't do this. And then so John, my boyfriend, came to me and said, you know, it's okay. You can leave the airplane and do it another day if you feel better. There's nothing wrong with that. I thought, you know what? No, I'm doing this today. So just give me some time. So I asked him to walk away. And then I just spoke to myself and said, this is ridiculous. Like, this is stupid. What the heck? So I sat there and thought, I'm not an imposter in any way, shape, or form. I know I can do this. I just flew perfectly well in another ship and everything's fine. I have the capacities to do this. And so moments later, I took off and had an hour amazing flight and had a perfect landing and everything was fine. But it just goes to show you how strong the imposter syndrome can be, even if you are fully prepared.
Yeah. It did cross your mind in that moment that you felt like an imposter, quote unquote.
Completely. Yeah. That's how I got out of it, is thinking, wait a minute, these are just thoughts. Mm-hmm. Based on nothing, based on fear, based on, I don't know. I don't even know what it was based on, but it was just thin air.
Well, we're going to spend this episode getting into some of the understandings of what is this thing called the imposter syndrome and what causes it and what we can do about it. So this is episode 11 of the Multipod. Thanks for joining us. As always, I'm Ted and with me is Sandrine. And our special guest today from the Putty Tribe is Mr. DB, who is joining us from Kentucky. And he's going to chat to us as well about some of his thoughts about this thing called the imposter syndrome. So we're excited to get another episode out to all of our wonderful listeners. Sandrine, how are you doing otherwise? What's new with you? Or have you been having a good couple weeks, enjoying the nice warm weather?
Yes, spring has finally arrived in our very cold climate, so we're very happy, and we're finally outdoors every day, so that's good.
I had a bit of a surprise today. I logged into the Putty Tribe and forum, and there was, let me check here, this little emoji thing, see if I can find it. And it's something like, I guess it's like a birthday cake. Today is my 1-year anniversary of joining the Putty Tribe.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Happy birthday!
Well, thank you. I didn't realize it was this day. I thought it was early May, but that makes sense. So yeah, here we are, a year later already. It's gone by fast, and it's been quite a year as part of the Putty Tribe, getting to know a few people and being part. It's the first paid online community I've been part of. You know, and anything I guess that's paid that you obviously put your own money into, you take a bit more seriously and put more effort into. You want to get your money's worth and feel the value. So I've certainly made the effort to do that. And, of course, I'm so happy that I have the chance to contribute something really constructive here with our podcast. And, that we're 11 episodes in. It's been a fun project. So onwards and upwards. So there's been some discussion, recently, but in general, I think you could even go back in some of the history over a few years of the Putty Tribe in the form of this thing called imposter syndrome. A lot of people bring it up and it kind of floats in and out of various topics and conversations. And some people bring it up very directly, explicitly, as a you know, directly wanting to talk about it. Sometimes it just kind of floats into some other discussion. But this thing, imposter syndrome, and I mean, for multi-potentialites, it's like we, you know, we have all of our multiple interests and the things that we want to do. And I mean, I think we strive to be experts or to learn and understand things well as multi-potentialites, not just, you know, the whole point is that it's not just to read a book or to watch a movie or a documentary. Like, we really want to learn and understand and act on the things that interest us. That's why we identify as this thing called multipotentiality. And the more, it seems that the more you get deeper into something, down a rabbit hole, or you've spent some time learning and maybe taking some action, maybe applying something, well, then you start to look around and you think, well, but there's so many other people that seem to know more than I do or are better than me. And who am I to really claim that I know anything about what I'm learning about, and you know, trying to say that I'm maybe an expert or I'm someone who can teach others. And that's essentially what we call this imposter syndrome idea. And I've seen it a lot in some of the kind of online business and entrepreneurial type stuff that I've come across over the last little while, as people, you know, attempt to start a business and become experts in something. And, you know, one of the first thoughts is like, well, but there's people who've been doing the same thing essentially for years, you know, maybe like 5 or 10 years, and I'm starting from scratch, and who am I to be coaching or teaching people or saying that I'm some kind of expert? So we're going to try to understand a little bit more about this today, and, you know, how much of it is a psychological problem or thing, and how much can we kind of pull it apart? And obviously, you know, we don't want to let it dominate or ruin us, but maybe it's kind of a constructive thing as well that gives us a bit of context and something we can draw some strength from as well.
So if you don't mind me jumping in.
Yeah, well, welcome DB to the show. Yeah, it's great to have you here. And yeah, so give us some of your initial thoughts of what you think about the imposter syndrome.
So I mentioned this on the forums to Kiki, who had done the post imposter syndrome is fun. And I just want to touch on this sort of briefly. Imposter syndrome, at least as it's defined in like psychological circles and sociological circles, isn't something that happens when you try something new. It's basically defined as, here, I'll give you a quick quote. Despite external evidence of their competence, those exhibiting the syndrome remain convinced that they are frauds and do not deserve the success they have achieved. Proof of success is dismissed as luck, timing, or as a result of deceiving others into thinking they are more intelligent and competent than they actually believe themselves to be. So when we're talking about imposter syndrome specifically, it's people who have demonstrated accomplishments and demonstrated competence who still feel like they're faking it or they're not really as good as their accomplishments would lead one to believe. Kind of like, you know, Sandrine's opening story. She knew she could do the flying, and she had accomplishments that proved she could do the flying, but she still felt like she couldn't do it and that it wasn't something she was capable of. And that's different than somebody who is trying something new for the first time and looks around and says, I'm so far behind everybody else. This is scary. This is exciting. And they're separate things, really.
So it's like the more advanced along you are in something, the worse it could get.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, and we can circle back to this later, but that's the heart of the whole Dunning-Kruger effect, is the more competent you are at a task, the more likely you are to experience imposter syndrome. Whereas the less competent you are at a task, the more likely you are to be confident that you can do it.
Yeah, isn't that what we call basically beginner's luck?
Well, it doesn't actually have to do with anything outside your own head. So like beginner's luck is, you know, hey, I made a hole in one the first time I played golf. It's results oriented. Whereas the Dunning-Kruger effect is theory of mind oriented. It's I feel confident about my ability to do this, even if my ability to do this is terrible.
All right, so it's more of a sense of overconfidence.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay,
it's overconfidence. It's like it explains things like why 80% of drivers believe that they're above average drivers. You know, statistics like that. The Dunning-Kruger effect explains it because, you know, basically 80% can't be above average mathematically, but there's a large percentage that just is unaware that they're below average.
That's interesting. So that's this Dunning-Kruger effect is separate then from the imposter syndrome or the notion that you think you can't do something.
Well, they're almost exact opposites,
right.
But they're on a sliding scale that sort of, you know, explains the two ends. Someone who's really, really skilled who doesn't think they're very skilled, and that's imposter syndrome. And then on the other hand, you have somebody who's terrible at something but thinks they're amazing, and that's Dunning-Kruger.
I see. Okay. DB, can you share, if you like, but can you share any maybe if a bit of your own experience or any anecdotes of how you've dealt with imposter syndrome or something similar to it?
Sure, absolutely. You know, we can step away from the, I guess, academic stuff and get into the personal, which is fine.
Sure.
So I'm currently employed as a substitute high school teacher, and it's really interesting because it's been a long time for me since I was in high school, and the subject matter is not necessarily difficult stuff. And so I have no problem teaching it. I have no problem stepping in and saying, you know, this is the right mathematical answer, or no, really, this is how biology is, or any of the other subjects I teach. Being a sub, I kind of teach everything. anyways, so from that perspective, I have no problem coming in and being an authority, or a quote unquote expert, although I'm definitely not an expert in my own mind at all. But then my actual educational background and career background is marketing and general business strategy. And anytime that I've ever done consulting work where I'm talking to, you know, CEOs or other executive leadership types, I always personally feel like whatever I'm teaching them, regardless of how much they know or don't know, that it's just stuff that seems to me to be so obvious that I feel bad about, you know, charging to teach, basically.
Maybe Sandrine can jump in because she is a coach, basically. And do you have experienced something along those lines?
Yeah, it's very, you should mention it that way because it really is that you're sitting with the person, you're telling them, you're hearing what their issue is. You come with giving them paths of solutions to help them go in the right direction. And they have this aha moment and you kind of go inside your head. You don't say it out loud, but inside your head, you go, really? They didn't think of that? And to you, it seems so obvious and so simple and so just out there that you kind of stay for a moment thinking, how is it they didn't think of that? And so, yeah. And sometimes you feel like, really, and I'm charging this person this much money to tell them something that to me seems so bloody obvious. And I think the answer to that is to remember that one of the biggest issues, whether you're an entrepreneur running a business or you're an executive running a department or you're whatever it is, or you're even in a personal relationship and need some advice, a lot of times the only reason why that obvious solution, the obvious answer doesn't jump at you, it's that famous cliche of you're looking at the forest this far away from the tree, like inches away from the tree, and you can't possibly see the forest if you're so close to the tree. So when you're living your own life, or when you're developing your own business, or you're running a department, or you're managing 50 people, a lot of times you don't have that perspective. You don't have that step back that allows you to see everything so clearly that the coach or the teacher or the instructor or the the consultant will help you see. And so that's the main advantage that we have. And so, but we feel that feeling of I'm a fraud because it's so simple to us that it feels like, well, it can't possibly be that this person who is smart, who is doing the right things, who is so high up in the hierarchy, can't see these things. And actually it's very simple. They can't see them because they're too involved. They're so far deep into this whole situation that they can't see what you can see from the outside. And that's why consultants, psychologists, and all these fields of professional specializations are so powerful and so important just because we have that perspective.
And that's what people are paying for.
Exactly. They're paying for somebody to help them see what they can no longer see because they're way too involved. And that's why, have you ever noticed how it's so easy to tell somebody else what to do with their career, how to work out their relationship issues, how to work out their problems with their kids, with their parents, with whatever. But for yourself, it's always so difficult.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, though, when you point that out, just giving people advice, because I hear from both of you that it feels like it comes down to money, essentially, when you're charging for something, or if it's part of your job, and there's that expectation you're being paid to do something, right? And then there's a whole other level. It feels like there's a whole other level of expectation if you're giving advice or you're trying to help somebody out, friends or family. Then, I mean, it's a nice thing to do, but there's no money involved. And so it's a different level of expectations. I suppose that kind of increases maybe the stress or the pressure of the situation if there's money involved. And like you're worried as the coach, as the proverbial expert, that, you know, other people have those expectations. I'm paying for this, so you better give me what I want. And that's where you feel the kind of pressure, right?
I think it comes from the money definitely makes it different, and it gives that whole element of, you know, who am I to give them this advice? But at the end of the day, if that person that you're teaching things to or instructing or coaching or consulting, whatever you want to call it, really wants your help and sees things more clearly after every conversation, then that's the justification. That's where you finally get rid of that imposter syndrome. I know every single time I help a client and they have an aha moment and then they go, oh my God, everything's so clear now. Thank you so much. And everything that sentence erases any imposter syndrome worries that I could have had moments prior.
It validates it.
What about you, DB? I'm curious. So,
yeah, that kind of reminds me of a couple of thoughts. One, we sort of touched on in a previous conversation, the whole concept of when you start doing the thing, you don't think inside your head as much, and instead you're in the process of doing it. You're giving advice. You're performing. And it's sort of the imposter syndrome, the fear, the anxiety, all of that, it sort of fades away the minute you just start. And I'd mentioned the example of the movie Sing, where there's a character who has stage fright, and the producer of the show suggests that you just start singing. And when you start singing, your stage fright evaporates, it disappears. And That definitely works for me, at least, although sometimes just starting is its own separate probably podcast. There's that. And then there's also the idea that imposter syndrome is largely situational. It's not a personality trait. It's not a disorder like the name syndrome would suggest. Really, it's more of a sociological phenomenon that only occurs in certain types of situations, and maybe not even every time, maybe only the first time.
Yeah, everyone would have their own individual experience with it, for sure, depending on the context, the situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say that for the women, and I want to say a little wink to Sarah who just joined us, but for the women in the imposter syndrome, I really think it's hormonal, but that's a whole other conversation. I don't know about you, Sarah, but I know that there's times in the month where I have no imposter syndrome whatsoever, and then there's other times in the month where I have full imposter syndrome. I link it to my female aspect of things, but hey.
I don't know if it's tied up with hormones or what, but definitely there's like, it's like a roller coaster that some days is you feel super confident and you feel like you're gonna make everything work, and some days it's like I just wish I wouldn't wake up or leave my bed in all day.
But you know, I say that as a joke, but there is actually something. I used to work for somebody who was very, very strict on biorhythms. And so I started looking up biorhythms. And at the time with this boss, I would only go and see her once I had checked the biorhythms and I knew her birth date and I knew different things about her. And so I was able to check them. And it worked every single time. It was crazy. It was like clockwork. So if I went to see her about a question that was a rational question, then I would look at her, because in biorhythms, you can see the mental state, the physical state, and the emotional state. So it's three little rhythms that go in is this wave pattern. And so at a specific moment in the month, you'll have all three at the high, and then all three at the low, and then somewhere in between. And so if you had a rational question to ask a person, you wait till they're on their high rationally. And it was incredible because I kind of ran a bit of a test with it, and it worked. It worked every single time. And it really got me questioning the whole biorhythm aspect of things about where our negative thoughts are coming from.
Yes.
Well, that leads into, links back to imposter syndrome or confidence and self-esteem, and it explains how you have lower moments or higher moments. And it's not all just coincidental. There is some kind of study and logic to it as well. So how much can, you know, imposter syndrome, as we're talking about today, like link back to just how you're feeling in a moment? And the next day you could be in essentially the same situation, but feel a lot more confident and not maybe the imposter thing doesn't even cross your mind.
Which of course certainly goes back to the whole idea that it's completely contextual. You know, part of that is maybe your biorhythms or, you know, any of the other things that we've mentioned, but it's not who you are. It's not something that's consistent for anybody. It's purely contextual.
I'm interested to hear Sarah's perspective as an artist. And would you say you have any, I guess, personal experience with feeling like an imposter? You know, this whole imposter syndrome idea. Is it a common thing amongst artists? I think it is.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah. I still have a lot of a struggle calling myself an artist sometimes.
Well, listen, particularly because, as I always admire, of course, artists, creative people, because you're kind of like the front lines. You're the ones that are putting things out there, original content, which is really a courageous thing to do. And, you know, and inevitably it's in the grand scope of, well, how does it relate to other types of art and that medium and genre and so on. So they surely
so
links
diverse.
Into the imposter. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so diverse, and sometimes it's so broad, and everyone has like a different like idea and concept about it. So maybe you'll say you're an artist, and the idea that you have in your head is completely different to the other person that is listening to you, and they create their own vision about it. But I'll talk about this. I had this conversation with another party creep. He interviewed me. He Robert. Okay. He was doing like this whole workshop about imposter syndrome. And I remember telling him, you know, like, I have now less struggle calling myself an artist, because I've been thinking a lot, what does it mean to be an artist, right? And I come to realize that at the end, it's what it means to you. And for me, it was not only studying, but devoting myself to it, and it became like a lifestyle. Like being an artist, it's more about questioning your surroundings, having curiosity about who you are, where you are, what are the meanings, and that surround you and surrounds everyone with the context, and kind of like living through that lifestyle makes me feel more comfortable to say that I am an artist. It's not only about what you produce, than the way you live.
Yeah, how you identify yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever felt that feeling like a quote-unquote imposter has stopped you from doing something, stopped you from creating or calling yourself an artist?
No, I mean, I won't stop doing the things I do. It's just that sometimes I will have like a struggle in order to communicate it or to find the right words in order to explain it.
You know, in my experience, how strongly we identify with something as a task or a job really affects how much I feel confident about it. And I'm curious if that's your experience with art, is if you say I'm an artist and it's your lifestyle and it's who you are, does that make you more confident or less confident?
I think they are separate. That confidence comes within me, and it will depend on the day of the roller coaster I am in. So one day I'll be like, yes, I'm gonna call myself an artist. And other days will be like, well, I'm not sure, we'll see, but yes, I guess that will be the word to call myself an artist. But I feel that it's always tied up to like the confidence that comes within me.
It's really interesting because I'm listening to you and I'm remembering a conversation I had with Kiki recently, because Kiki seems to be at the center of all of these deep questions, but I had this conversation with her, and she, in the conversation, she called me this, and I think I mentioned this on the last episode, but she called me this amazing woman aviator. And it's still running in my head today, as I was out flying today and I met another woman who's learning to fly, and it still confronted me, you know, thinking, well, how is it that I still some days can't consider myself as a woman aviator, even though I fly? But just the term seems like superwoman kind of thing. And to me, it felt like, yeah, okay, so I fly, big deal kind of thing. So it's very weird how what like the people will view you some way and think something of you, and then you put that so high on a pedestal and you have a hard time putting yourself on that same pedestal because that's not the way you see yourself. Mm. And it's like it's almost like ego driven, and you're thinking, I don't want to be ego driven there. So does it make me less egotistical? Is it? And then of course I stop thinking about it because it just gets complicated, but
That is making me think that I have more, like I have more than a struggle to call myself an artist in Spain than in the U.S. or in New York or Boston. That's the only place I've been, and I feel it's because, like in New York or Boston, like I'm surrounded by other peers that are artists, and the way people see art is like more broad, so and more common. And in Madrid or in the circle, like I am surrounded by, I'm not surrounded by so many artists. And that is something that it stops me from saying, oh, I am an artist.
So it's like you own it more because you're surrounded by people who are like-minded.
Yeah, or I feel like I'm not calling the attention about me, I guess, or I'm not the weirdo, like, and there are other weirdos.
Right.
So I feel like it's more regular. Like people are more used to it. They don't think something like, oh, you know, and
judgmental as a result.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Judgment. There you go.
That's got to be an issue that the putty peeps mostly struggle with, because I personally hate job-based titles. You know, I'm not a marketer. I'm not a data scientist. I'm not a teacher. I've done these things, but that's not who I am. And then the whole idea of I'm not an aviator. Well, that's because you're someone who flies planes in addition to a bunch of other things, you know?
Yeah, I think it boils down, and you have a really good point there. I think it boils down to the labeling that we feel that our society needs to give us, this one label. And because we're multi-potentialites, we have so many labels that we like, and not one of those things that we like to do defines who we are. And so it's that definition of who we are that's so complex that I was so happy to stumble upon the TED Talk from Emily and the multi-potentialite, because I finally had one word that was able to say, this is who I am. I can define myself as a multi-potentialite a lot easier. It's a lot easier than trying to say, well, I'm an aviator / coach / you know, and right. Seven slashes later, you're still going on and on. And the person goes like, really? What planet are you from? So instead of having to go through that, I'm a multi-potentialite. What the hell is that? Well, I just do lots of stuff.
Yeah, then you just have to define multi-potentiality.
Right, exactly. But it's still simpler and it's still more fun. At least I think it's more fun to define that and then explain it, than to say to somebody, I'm this/this/this/that, and then 7 slashes later, they're still looking at you and their eyes just get bigger and they're going, whoa.
You got me thinking something that Sarah had said a couple of minutes before about how when you're surrounded by other artists, it's simpler to just say, I'm an artist. Mm. When you're surrounded by other pilots, I'm a pilot. When you're surrounded by other teachers, I'm a teacher. And how that is, maybe, I don't know, in my mind, that almost fosters a little bit of imposter syndrome, because you don't really think that's really an adequate explanation of who you are, but it's much simpler than giving the full explanation.
It's funny because every time somebody says, oh, so you're a pilot, I always feel like having to say, among other things, and as if it wasn't enough, you know? But that's not because it isn't enough. It's just because that's not, again, it doesn't define me, right?
Yeah. Fully.
It's not what I do 24/7, 365, and it's not the only thing I want to do. I think it comes back to that whole, because I think the imposter syndrome for multi-potentialite is even greater, because it comes back to that whole thing of, if we're so interested in so many fields and so many professions and so many hobbies or whatever, however we want to call them, are we not as good as somebody else? Are we not as complete as somebody else because we have so many, like, you know, jack of all trades, master of none? Because you have so many trades, because you have so many passions, because you do all these things, does that make you less than somebody else? And so limiting yourself to saying, I'm an artist, or I'm a pilot, or I'm a teacher, and you know that you're also that plus 5 other things. By not saying those 5 other things, do you feel now incomplete? And so, but then you also feel like an imposter because you only do part of that. You don't do it fully, full time, full throttle like everyone else, kind of thing.
We identify that this whole imposter thing, it comes back to like the situation, right? And context. So in our, I guess, maybe day-to-day individual lives, we probably wouldn't dwell on it, but then suddenly you have to kind of prove yourself to someone else, or, you know, in human nature, I guess, compare yourself to someone else, and someone, that other person or group of people, have expectations, maybe, or you think they do, and assumptions about you. And now suddenly you feel like an imposter. Now you feel like, well, I want to call myself this, but I don't feel like I measure up to what these people expect of me. So it's a question of confidence and just courage. I like Kiki had, we come back to Kiki. She says, if you have imposter syndrome, she says, congratulations. It means you're doing something important. So we have to draw strength from, if the feeling crosses our mind, we should embrace it. We should say, this is a good sign. It means that we're getting somewhere. We have taken action. We haven't just given up, let's say. We've taken action. We've put ourselves out there, especially, well, as an artist or whatever it is. And yeah, people are going to look at that. They're going to maybe critique or judge us. And, you know, it's up to us to respond and try to find some strength from that and feel positive about ourselves and keep pushing forward.
I feel that most of the times it's not the others, it's the worst judges are ourselves.
Right. So that's the paradox of all of this, to kind of bring a full circle, is that we think it comes from other people critiquing us and so on. It really is our own internalization of how we think other people are feeling. No one else has told us that you're a fraud, or you're not very good, or you shouldn't be doing this or that. We're telling ourselves that. So you had to bring it back to yourself and say, well, I'm the one that's giving myself this imposter syndrome thing. I'm the one, therefore, that can pull myself out of it. And it sounds like with our experiences, our stories we've talked about today, we've all done that in various ways, but we've been through it and we said, you know, we've identified it, that we felt inadequate or whatever. We realized we're the ones making ourselves feel that way, and we took some action to do something about it. So that's good.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think it comes back. It's funny when you just mentioned what Kiki was saying about congratulations. I think it comes back to, it's so funny because I spent the day with my son and a friend of his today. And so, you know, 12-year-old kid. And at one point he kind of like jokingly blamed me for something that I had done. And I said, well, yeah, well, at least I was doing something. So maybe I can get blamed for doing something wrong. But you were just standing there doing nothing. So you can't get blamed for doing anything wrong because you just didn't do anything. Yeah. So I think it comes back to that, right? If you try something or you're doing something and you're getting better at it, and then you feel like you're an imposter, well, the next thing should be in your head, well, at least I'm doing something. At least I'm out there. At least I'm, you know, I'm perfecting my trade. Yeah, exactly. And so you can only blame yourself for not doing it perfectly, but because you're actually doing it. But if you're doing nothing, then you can't get blamed for anything. So
absolutely. Yeah. You know, just to kind of pull back to a philosophical point of view, because I don't know, that's how my brain functions sometimes. Knowledge is infinite. So the idea that anybody is an expert at anything is completely contextual. Because if knowledge is infinite, it's impossible for anyone to ever really expertise in anything. So all of us, whether we choose to do one thing or choose to do a million things, all of us, we have the full of the actual knowledge that's out there. And so, you know, this swing from I'm a fraud to I'm an expert to all of that, they're really just tiny little moves on a needle, because the reality of it is that we're all at the bottom of the scale. You know, we're a tiny little blip in an infinite cosmos, and knowledge is infinite. And so therefore most of us basically know nothing, which, you know, that sounds like a very dreadful existential crisis sort of crazy thought, but I find it to be kind of comforting because it's freeing. It makes me realize that I don't have to be the expert to be the expert. Mm-hmm. Because nobody can be the expert, you know?
It is freeing and liberating when you put it that way. Like, it's best to just kind of let it go, keep trying to improve and be the best you can be. But don't get hung up on it, and, you know, embrace the journey as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to share something, a bit of maybe actionable steps people can take. But I joined a community recently. It's called Location Indie, for people who are trying to basically be entrepreneurs and kind of self-employed and have freedom to kind of live where they want, whether it's travel or just set their own schedule and stuff like that. So one of the guys who founded this group, his name is Travis, and this is very coincidental. That's why I kind of wanted to bring it up, because today he was posted this thing about imposter syndrome, and he's telling the story about how he stumbled across this blog and this person who had this business, and they did like one of these income report things, and it turns out they're making tons of money. And I mean, this guy Travis and his partner Jason, at least is a member of the Putty Tribe as well. But, you know, they've built this great community and lots of people are members, and it's a successful business for all intents and purposes. But Travis was feeling like an imposter, because suddenly he comes across someone else and it looks like they're way more successful than him and they're making all this much more money, and, you know, and he felt so inadequate. So he suggested three steps that can help people deal with that whenever you're in that kind of situation, when you feel inadequate and you feel like you're an imposter. So first off, he says, send the person that you're comparing yourself to a nice message. So in this case, you know, maybe say, I really like your content. I like what you're sharing with people, with the community, and I appreciate it. And, you know, it's inspiring, etc. So send them a nice message. The second thing, write down three things that you have done that you're proud of and that the person you are comparing yourself to probably hasn't done. So if you want to go that route to comparing, but if it gives you some strength, right, then, you know, feel good about yourself and say, hey, I've accomplished some things too, you know. And you especially, as we say, you know, people that have taken action, they've put themselves out there, they've been courageous, they're creating art or whatever it is. And, you know, you have every reason to feel proud and feel like you've accomplished something. And the third thing I like too, he says, then do something that's completely removed from the thing you're occupying yourself with that's getting you down. So go for a walk, go play, some sports or something, play some music, listen to music, read a book, etc. Get your mind off it. And that helps you kind of then come back to it, you know, maybe a few hours later kind of thing. And you probably even just have a nap, you know, feel a little more refreshed and get some different perspectives. So I thought those are three kind of interesting actionable tips. If in the moment, you know, on some afternoon, you suddenly stumble across something and you're feeling great, you're having a great day, and then you see someone else who it's like, wow, they've just achieved so much more, it seems, and they're so much further ahead, and you feel so inadequate and you feel like an imposter. Who am I to be saying and doing all the things that I'm doing? Well, I mean, it's a chance to just pause and acknowledge the things that you have accomplished and take a little space, and then you start to feel better about yourself. So that's a little bit of a takeaway from this episode.
I like that.
Yeah.
So that made me relate a lot with my own personal story. That so I started this project about interviewing artists about their own experience and how they make it in like the art world and try to find like a sustainable way for themselves. And by doing that, it was also a way of finding answers for myself about, am I going to be in this situation? I'm going to struggle forever. And I realized that, like, by interviewing all these artists, I not only stopped mystifying the others, and also realizing that the others have the same struggles that I have, and that they have gone through the same things that I'm going through. And that helps me to humanify them and bring down from the pedestal the other person and stop feeling that bad about myself.
That's a good way to put it, you know, putting others up on a pedestal when we're all humans, we're all normal people. Everybody had to start from somewhere. And that person who you think is totally out of in a whole different stratosphere, probably someone that you could actually relate to a lot more than you think.
Yeah, and they for sure have the same doubts that you are having right now.
Mm-hmm. And actually, there's something, it made me think of something when you said that, actually, both of you, is that there's a new series of conferences that have started here in Montreal. I don't know if they exist anywhere else, but they're called, sorry for the curse, but they're called Cup Nights. And so you have these entrepreneurs agree to come. There's three each time, and they share like a huge failure that they've gone through. And they tell the whole story of how they really messed up and how, you know, sometimes their entire business was down the drain and they had to start from scratch, or sometimes like a whole big project went south and they had to start over. And so by having these entrepreneurs who are now living a lot of success, sharing their deepest mistake that many times cost them a lot of money, cost them a lot of lack of sleep, cost them, you know, a lot of stuff, it just humanizes, you know, these people who you look at and go, oh my god, these people are so successful and they're doing so well, yet they've been through mm-hmm. you know, the rough times, and they've had some really bad stories and bad things happen to them. So it's a really good way to be able to look at other people who are doing something that you might dream of doing, like being an entrepreneur and starting a business, and realizing that, you know what, they do have failures. They do have moments of discouragement. They do have moments where they just want to give it all up and just stop. And so that just reminds you that, you know, it's, if you're going through that, then it's just normal.
you know, there's a entrepreneurial business circle quote that reminds me of I don't know, it's a Silicon Valley favorite, but it's by Samuel Beckett, and it's ever tried, ever failed, no matter, try again, fail better.
I've heard that, yeah, fail better.
Yeah, that's neat, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to this conception of failure as a bad thing. But at the end, it's like, it's a continuing learning experience. And I normally try to, instead of using the word failure, using the word experiment.
Yeah, that's a little more positive. Well, shall we keep experimenting better then on our next episode?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a fun one, a good conversation.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's always very international, which is fun because there's really four of us from four different places. Mm-hmm. So that's really good. And Sarah, this is your last few days in North America, correct?
Yeah, I'm leaving the 29th, so the next weekend will be my last weekend here.
Back to Spain?
Yes.
Great, and thanks, DB, for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, again, you're fairly new to the Putty Tribe, so it was great to get you involved, meeting some new people and finding your place in it.
Yeah, thanks.
Hi, this is Sandrine with my tip for this episode on overcoming the imposter syndrome. So as you heard, we realized through all the discussion that this feeling of inadequate skill set or capacities actually comes from lack of confidence and comparison with others. So I invite you to do the following couple of tasks, and it'll help you overcome this feeling, which only exists in your mind. One, if you haven't already done so, make a list of your top 10 accomplishments that you are the most proud of. You know, the things you'd like to brag about if you weren't so modest. Two, keep it close to you. If you're a pen and paper person, kind of like I am, keep it on the inside of the cover of your favorite notebook or agenda. If you're a real techie, type it up in your notes on your phone, and then take a print screen that you'll use as a lock screen. So every time you want to unlock your phone, the thing you're going to see is that list. Or you can put it as your home screen, but have it somewhere that it pops up in your face pretty often. Three, if that's still not good enough to prove to you that this syndrome is all in your head, then go on YouTube and look up successful people's biggest failures. You realize that every person you admire has had disastrous moments at one point in their lives, and they're still moving forward. Four, watch the video called Everybody Dies, But Not Everybody Lives by Prince E. That's Prince E-E-A is how it's spelled. I think I must have watched this video at least 15 times, and I've referred it to I don't know how many people in the past couple of years. And whenever I feel that I don't have what it takes or that I'm not as capable as the other person, I watch this video and it brings me right back to center, right aligned with who I am. And it just makes me move forward within minutes of watching it. So on that note, I, Sandrine, your friend here at the Multipod, invite you to go for it and tell that imposter syndrome to beep. Well, you know what I mean. Anyway, thanks for listening and back to you, Ted.
Thanks, Sandrine. Great tips as always, and I look forward to checking out that video. Well, let's take a look at a couple new Putty Peep profiles for this week. We'll start with Tony Wiltshire, who is in Birmingham in the UK. He's currently into freelancing, social activism, writing a lot, and helping Putty Peep self-publish in our newest Putty Tribe group. We've just launched a discussion kind of planning group talking about self-publishing books and so on, and things that people, projects people can get into. So Tony's been a big part in getting that going. He lives again in Birmingham right now. He's previously lived in Lincoln in the UK and Chicago, USA. Link to any personal websites? Well, he does have a site here. He says he's kind of working on it under construction. Maybe this will give him a little bit of a boost to add that content and keep it going. It's called writerswingman.co.uk. Writerswingman.co.uk is his website. And that kind of gets into an interesting fact that jumps out from his bio. He talks about leaving his full-time job to work freelance full-time. That was a big milestone for him, undoubtedly. And anything else that jumps out here? Well, he says he's, again, on those same lines, building a freelance career, hopefully to provide a sustainable income, of course, something I've been interested in as well. So we should connect, Tony, and share some ideas. But it's a common theme here, entrepreneurship, that goes through the Putty Tribe, of course, as we all try to apply various skills and knowledge that we've learned over the years. And that segues well into our next profile, Charlotte Walters, who is in Canada, I think in Toronto, I gather from her profile. Charlotte is into blogging, community-based spaces, how films are made, self-publishing, and much, much more. So places that she's lived, various places around Canada, St. Albert, which is just outside of Edmonton. She's lived in Calgary, Hamilton, Ontario, London, Ontario, and Ottawa, basically where I live. She's also lived in Berlin, Munich, and San Juan, Puerto Rico. So Charlotte has a consulting business gathered, going by her website. It's called, with her personal name, charlottewalters.com. So Charlotte, C-H-A-R-L-O-T-T-E, W-O-L-T-E-R-S.com is her personal site. So you can check that out. She does have a blog there and some other interesting resources about coaching and so on. One thing that jumps out for me, again, you know, a lot of us can point to big changes, changes of scenery and moving and trying out new places as kind of a kickstart to new paths and new directions that we've taken. So Charlotte really resonates with that. She says living in Berlin for a couple months in late 2015 and taking her taking a sabbatical started a shift in her life. So that's something that really jumps out from her profile. And beyond that, well, I mean, you know, she's a fellow Canadian. Again, she's she says she lived in Ottawa, where I live. We're both interested in travel, mountains, good coffee. But definitely this. She talks about translating her multi-potentialite background into a business that allows her the flexibility to continue to explore the world. So here's a similar theme, freelancing, trying to be self-sufficient and sustainable income. Once again, a common theme here in the Putty Tribe. And I think we'll put that high on our list of topics to talk about soon. So that wraps up episode number 11. And as always, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to keep at it here over the course of the summer, as you know, people are off on vacation and doing various different kinds of projects, as you've heard on the show. But we're very excited to get some more people involved. I'll give a shout out to Clay, who's in Italy, and Toy, who I think is in Los Angeles. And you'll hear from Vanessa soon. She was on the show, of course, recently. She should be back on as well. So you'll start to hear some more new voices. But I'll still be around. Sandrine, of course, will be here. Sarah, who's heading back to Spain soon, but she'll still be around this summer. So this is our community effort, our community show. And we're going to keep it going. And if there's any one thing that you can do to help us out, I mean, as always, you're welcome to get involved in any way you'd like. But anything, something in particular, if you want to send us some ideas for topics, things we can discuss, something that's on your mind, maybe share a resource, you know, a video, a blog, or an ebook even, or something like that, that can give us some pointers and suggestions. We're all ears. We often kind of are spontaneous with what we want to talk about and decide, you know, just kind of spur of the moment, what feels interesting, what's new, what's been talking about on the tribe and the forum and so on. So we're really all ears, and we always appreciate your feedback. If you just have a few minutes, you're welcome to send us an email. We do have our own email address here for the show. It is themultipodcast@gmail.com. Themultipodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Or for those who, of course, are members of the Putty Tribe, you can reach out to us through the forum and the direct messaging there as well. But it's open to anyone. Community members, and of course anyone outside the community who's listening to the show. And we always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again in a couple weeks.